Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of This Week in Quality. My name is Simon Tomes, Community Lead at the Mottaverse. Looking forward to hanging out with everyone today. I can see lots of people joining in the chat, so thank you to those of you joining along live today, and welcome to our listeners who are listening to this on the podcast, catching up on what's been happening this week in quality. Well, what has been happening in this week in quality? Well, where to start? There is a lot of stuff going on, which is exciting. So later on in this episode, we're going to dive into the epistemology of testing. Some really good stuff coming from Sean Vernier, which we can dive into a little bit later on. So do stick around for that. There's been other things happening. A good article went live by Sanjeev Kumar, How I Measure Quality Without Looking at Bug Counts. So it's like, I guess, rethinking how we measure quality. There was another satellite. What are the metrics? In fact, Emily O'Connor shared a good poll that she ran at the Leeds Testing Atelier earlier on this week. So do go check that in. Check it out, because the results are in on that one. So I won't spoil it, but do go look for that moment on the Mottaverse site. What else has been going on? There's been some chat about AI, of course. So we have the AI quality paradox, examining the contradiction between AI's promise of faster delivery and the risk of lower quality outputs. So go look for that one as well on the Observatory. What else has been happening? Something I think we're going to talk about in a future episode of This Week in Quality is trying to answer the question, what makes a good product? So there's some stuff happening out there in the community. Rosie shared a good moment. A good product is one that is used. Maybe we can bring that into today's theme as well around epistemology. And we've been talking about Motticon. It's on its way. So Deanna has been sharing some overviews of what's going to be covered at Motticon. So do go check them out. There's lots of good stuff, amplifying the good people that are going to participate, including Suzanne Abdulrahman. She talked about stuff that Stuart Thomas is doing. So do go check that out. Right, folks. Well, let's see what's going on in the chat. There's some messages coming in. So hello to Louise. Hi to Sean, Judy. Gary's joined us today, and Neil. Fantastic. Nice one, folks. Thank you for joining us. I just want to double check. Could someone just let me know that they can hear me? I just want to have a curious thought about my audio. Yes, you can, Louise. Thank you for that. And Stu as well for putting a thumbs up. Appreciated. And do share a message in the chat. So after this episode, whoever said hi in the chat, I can check you in. And that means you earn a star. So you get a star for registering for This Week in Quality. And you also get a star for being checked in. So if you put your name on the chat, I can see that you joined, even if you just say hi or put, I don't know, QWERTY UI op or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever you might do sometimes when you test a field and you just blurt in, like, I think I usually go with ASD FG. So I slam the keyboard sometimes when I fill out a field. Just go for it. It'd be quite funny to see what appears in the chat. And thank you again for some more confirmation. Louise, it was a bit loud, but I've adapted. Apologies for being loud, blasting in your ear there, Louise. Hopefully things are at a good volume for you now. Good to see you, Adi. Thank you for joining us. Lovely to see you here today. So let's think about the four moments that Sean Vernier posted earlier on this week. So a while back, he put an Ask Me Anything about the epistemology of, just ask me about epistemology and its relationships to testing and the practice of testing, which is really cool, right? because this kind of gets quite philosophical, and it thinks about our relationship with knowledge and beliefs, how we think about things, what can we know, how do we know it, how reliable are our sources related to the things we know. So this is a really good type of thing to dive into. So that's seen in the chat. He caught me there, hence why I said the word type. Louise Woodham says, is it a type of pasta? Well, it could be. Maybe that's one for us to discuss. If testing was a type of pasta, what type of pasta would it be? There's a question for you. Answers on a postcard in the chat. So let's share some thoughts. So head on over to Sean's profile. It'll probably help if I shared that in the chat so you can follow along for those who are joining us live. So if you hop onto Sean's profile, which for those joining us live is now in the chat, you scroll down and you can filter by moments if you want to, but the four top things in his contributions section are the four AMAs that I'm going to reference. And as Aidy shares, I was hooked at Sean saying QA navigates beliefs in the search of the truth. Yeah, I love that as well. I think there's some other quotes I pulled out from Sean. You know, a classic, which I think is a held belief from a number of us quality professionals, is I believe that QA does not break anything. The system comes to us broken. We just reveal that information. And going on a bit further, some other quotes that I wanted to pull out from Sean. You need a system that makes that belief falsifiable. Until you have a system that can show you the truth of what you built, all you have is ideas, and ideas can't be tested. Whoa, that's a good one. I'd definitely like to get into debating that one for sure. Another one from Sean, and we will get Sean up on stage as I see he's in the chat, and it'd be lovely to speak with him about all of this stuff. Sean says, personally, I believe that quality engineers should not have a strong belief about the system. We should simply be holding spaces for others' beliefs while presenting where they conflict with each other and misalign with the truth, which I thought was very cool. Yeah, definitely one to discuss. Kind of his recent framing of QA quality people as truth finders and risk analyzers. Thought that was very cool as well. So yeah, so let's, you know, I've got some questions that I can put out to the community, but perhaps Sean, if you're up for it, what I'm going to do is I'm going to grab a link and I'm going to create a button that allows people to join the stage. We had a bit of fun with this the other day, so just bear with me a little bit whilst I create it. And then that should allow yourself, Sean, to jump on stage and then we can get some more people up to join the conversation. So let's see if that works. Okie dokie. Sean, if you're up for it, you should see the join the stage button in the top right of your view of this event. Feel free to press that one. And then, yeah, I'd love to kind of dive into a bit more about some of the things you were sharing and we can get a little bit deeper into the topic of the epistemology of testing. Okay, I see Sean has joined us backstage. Here we go, folks. Drum roll for technology working first time round. Here we go.
All right. We good?
We're good.
All right. Hey.
All right. So the truth is that you've joined the stage and that is a truth that we can test for real, right?
Yes. Yes, you can hear me. Therefore, it is true.
Therefore, it is true. I mean, this could be AI, Sean, for all I know, but I'm going to make the assumption and I'm going to assume that this is actually you, Sean.
Well, now you're getting into Chinese room problem boxes, right? Oh, like, crikey. Does it matter if it's real?
Oh, man. Oh, boy. So my mind just melts at questions like that. But yeah, it's lovely to have you join us. And thanks so much for, you know, answering those AMA questions that were put out. And, you know, no worries that I noticed on your replies saying it's been 2 months away. These things happen. I think the good thing is that folks can reply and, you know, you got back to folks and you shared your thoughts and ideas and that's what matters. So yeah, kind of where would you like to start on this topic? Is there like kind of an overarching theme? I mean, I've shared some of the thoughts or quotes directly from the moments that you've talked about. But yeah, where would you like to start when it comes to epistemology and testing?
Yeah, I think it's important to sort of recognize where this is coming from to begin with. So, you know, I like to think in terms of theory versus practice, right? So we tend to talk a lot about practice, exploratory testing, functional testing, test automation, the doing, the acts of testing, right? Whereas epistemology for me is the underpinning theory. It's a concept of what drives why we do what we do, right? So whenever I am looking at a practice, whenever I'm looking at some new form of testing or some system to test, I'm thinking, how does this relate back to uncovering the truth, right? How does this help me search for knowledge in an epistemological system?
I love that framing. And it's important, right? Because I think to your point, you know, let's take an example. Let's take a practical example. So you're running an exploratory testing session, or someone is, and they have some outcomes, and here's what I observed, here's some things that I've experienced, here's my observations and the context. And then like, well, how did I come to these conclusions? Like that layer on top, I find very interesting. And it's kind of like, I think it gives like, first of all, it highlights the fallibility of our approaches. I think it also highlights, you know, we are taking this seriously when we run an exploratory testing session, for example. Mm-hmm. And here's, you know, here's why I decided to do what I did, and here's how I did it. Not just here's what I observed. And I think that's, you know, it feels like it's related to what you're sharing, but correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's exactly what it is, right? Because there is that concept that still floats around that it's like, oh, like testers just mash on keyboards, right? And it's like, yeah, there's something to mashing on a keyboard occasionally, sure, right? But there's so much more behind that, right? I like to call it testing by accident, or testing by coincidence. You know, where you don't really have like, you're not really practicing anything at a skilled level, right? You're not looking for anything specific. You are just mashing on a keyboard. And sometimes that will break things, right? But how did it break? I don't know. You know, how do you reproduce that? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I was having a chat, like you mentioned, about sort of testing by coincidence. And I had a good, I recorded a call for insights with Brandy Brotherton earlier this week. And we landed on the term as conversational testing, where through the act of making conscious efforts to speak with people, not just relying on asynchronous chat, for example, mm-hmm. that you can test through conversations, like literally not know what you're going to reveal until you have the conversation. And the only way to find out, to find like, you know, where are we going to go with this thing? What's happening? Here's what I found and the reasons why, is to actually have a conversation, which kind of sounds a bit funny because it kind of sounds like, ah, well, that seems a bit obvious. But perhaps in this day and age of we just want fast answers, or we want to be quick, we want to be efficient, we kind of miss out on that conversational moment. And maybe, you know, maybe it is related to this. Maybe those conversations, do they find the truths? Perhaps they do. Or do they allow us to understand how we can get to the truth? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you're right. Like, conversations are so important for me as a tester, right? Because those inform your beliefs, right? So what we kind of have set up in this epistemological system is a Venn diagram, right? You have people's beliefs as a circle, and then you have the truth of the system that you're testing. And the truth is always from the perspective of the system. Whatever the system does is true. And then in the center of the Venn diagram, where the two circles overlap, is knowledge, right? That's parts of your product that have been used, that have known inputs and outputs that align with the beliefs of the people that developed it and designed it, right? So those conversations, they are beliefs, right? They're people telling you their belief about what the system does or should do. And the deeper dive you can take into those conversations, right? I get a lot of value out of sitting down and pair programming with developers, for example, or project managers or anyone else, just one-on-one and just talking to them, like over coffee or virtual coffee or whatever, because then you can really take a deep dive into what that person individually believes that they are building or working towards that you don't get out of broader meetings, right? The big room meetings, the big conference calls, there's a lot of personalities, there's a lot of voices. And in those situations, I actually tend to be quieter because what I'm listening for is people talking past each other, right? Two people using the same word in different meanings. And you're like, oh, you two are saying the same thing, but you're not understanding the core concept of what you're talking about, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm hearing you. I like that framing. And I think you called it out in one of your moments, like, you know, truth in software is like, it's always from the system's perspective, no matter how it's interpreted. So like your calculator example, I thought was good. So if a calculator outputs 6 for 2 plus 2, you know, that's the system's truth, even if it's incorrect. So like, you know, as quality engineers, we're trying to surface that truth rather than kind of argue over it. It's just like, you know, this is as it is based on the truth of the system, not what somebody says.
Right. And that's why I also say that you can't test beliefs, right? Because someone can sit you down and can describe to you, and we see this all the time, right? Someone can sit you down and describe to you this $1 million app idea that they have, right? And, you know, oh, it's going to do this and it's going to look like that and blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, the person sitting across from them could easily be like, oh, yeah, that sounds great. Like, I love that concept. I totally invested in that. Meanwhile, they're picturing a completely different app, right? Like, they're completely talking past each other, and that's because they don't have a source of truth. They don't actually have a system in front of them that does anything that is being described.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder, like, the concept of source of truth. Like, I'm trying to think of, like, the end user or the customer or the person who's using the application or service. Like, what truth do they have? They can certainly share their experience and they can share feedback. Like, you can be like, oh, this app is awesome, or like, oh, this app sucks. It doesn't work for me, or it doesn't meet my needs and it causes me more problems than things that it solves. So where do you think, like, the customer or the users of applications, you know, the variety of people that end up using a specific application, where do they fit in when it comes to the truth?
Oh, absolutely. Judy Mosley actually has a great comment in the chat. That's why spending time with customer support can be so helpful. They will describe user behavior that may not be known by engineering because they see more of the user behavior, not just what we think the system should do, right? And that's wonderful. That's exactly on point. And what I like to think of, that the center of the Venn diagram, the knowledge section where truth and belief overlap, that's the part of the product that has been used. I don't like to say that's a part of the product that has been tested, because it's not always testers, it's not always QA that are going to be the ones using the product. Anyone that uses the product is going to find the truth, right? They're going to find knowledge, and it's about tapping into, it's almost like a, not to say it out loud, it's almost like a disseminated testing network, right? Where testers are using the system internally, hoping to find problems, but also your users are testing the system because they're using it potentially a very different way than you are, right? So by connecting with users and customers, possibly through customer support, you can find use cases of the system that you never would have thought of internally, right? And those can turn into test cases, things that you want to do repeatedly in the future.
Yeah, love that. It's great to call out that comment from Judy as well. So thank you, Judy, for sharing. We've got some more comments coming in. AD Stokes shares, depending on who you are, you have different sources of truth for you: users, documentation, code, stakeholders, architecture, data, and others. Yes. And Alexander Romanov shares, user experience the product the way that testers may not think of. Yeah, nice way of framing it.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah. I would say to 80's comment, I push back a little bit and just say that those are all sources of beliefs, right? Because even code, it's not truth until it's in runtime, right? The code can be designed. You could read it and be like, oh yeah, that looks perfectly fine, but it doesn't have a null check in it where it should, or it doesn't guard against dividing by zero like it should, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think Sean, you probably know what I'm going to say, but I'll say it. That Venn diagram, I think we need to see it as a moment.
Hey, people in the chat, let me know. I have like an hour long like tech talk on the subject. Oh. If people want to see that sometime, I'm happy to.
Yeah, 100% Sean. I mean, you know, this could be, there's many things we could do with this, right? From masterclasses to, you know, a series of short, sharp videos that you could create as moments, like, you know, a minute and a half to camera, make a point, and then you kind of, your next moment makes another point, next moment makes another point, and maybe the Venn diagram is the anchor to that, those points that you're making. So yeah, go for it, Sean. I'd love to see all that stuff. And I know things are busy with you at the moment, but if you do find the time, I know I'd value it, and I can make a big guess that folks in the community would as well.
Yeah, I love hearing myself talk, so I'll never give up the microphone if you give it to me.
All right, there it is. You heard it here, folks. So this could be it, Sean. Just keep posting those videos. It's like, yes, it's another short video.
Is there anyone else who wants to join us up on stage, by the way? Like, I can't just dominate the microphone today.
Let's do it. Let's get people stuck in. You know, maybe there's, I could pose some questions, like maybe about, you know, thoughts around documentation. Is that the most important deliverable? To kind of hash out beliefs and kind of amplify beliefs? Is it really about, you know, the system itself, and only until we get the system can we get to the truths? So those sorts of things I think are worth debating. So yeah, folks, if you want to join us on stage, just for those who are listening live, press that join the stage button. We will see you pop backstage, and we can bring you up on stage to join the conversation. We'd love to hear from you today. And also, if you want to join us and just say hi, and introduce yourself. If you're new to the community, please do so as well. And perhaps if you want to talk about your week in quality, it doesn't have to be about the topic that we're discussing today. It'd just be lovely to hear from you. So we'll keep an eye on folks joining us backstage, and we will bring them up soon. But I see Sean the Alexander sharing more. So I saw many examples when a really good product failed to reach users just because of poor documentation. Ah, interesting.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah. Wow. And Judy sharing, I wonder if one way of thinking about it is truth as we know it. That's the frustration with test cases. When we wrote them at a specific time, they were true to the best of our knowledge. Now, features have changes, and the truth of those test cases has shifted.
I love that. I have a thought on this one, because it goes back to something that I have about test automation, which is you have to be very, very careful about what tests you automate and how you automate them, because they become truth, right? If you're only basing your test cases on what you're seeing, the truth of the system, you go into a calculator, you put 2 + 2, you get 6, and you go, oh, okay, cool. I'm going to write an automated test that says 2 + 2 = 6. That test is going to run forever. And if it fails, if someone changes the code to make 2 + 2 = 4, they're going to think they broke the system because the test case is failing, right? Even though 6 was always wrong.
Oh, wow. That's just a big melting emoji face appearing in my head right now. That's so true, right? So true. Oh, it really is. Sean, I can see AD's joined us. I'm so glad AD is able to jump on in. So AD, let's get you up on stage and jump in on this convo. AD, welcome.
Hello. And 2 + 2 = 1V, depending on what math number numerical system you use. So it's not a single source of truth.
Love it. Love it. It's also make that one and see what happens.
Are you both well, Simon, Sean?
Yeah.
All good. Thanks, AD, for asking. Jump on in. Tell us how your week's been, and jump straight into the conversation that we're having. So yeah, what are your thoughts, AD?
I've had such a week, so I'm gonna do the week first, because there's been a lot going on. I think I might have set some kind of record, but I'm not 100% certain. So we'll get to that. I've had a wonderful week, because at the beginning of the week on Tuesday, it was Leeds testing Atelier. Scott Kenyon and I, we both sponsor it, so we guaranteed a ticket, basically had to give back to the community. And there were so many people there I hadn't seen for ages, and it was great to see the Ministry of Testing represented really well. Neil Younger, who is leading the quality engineering chapter. He put a shout out for people to say hi to him. And I just say hi to him, and he laughed at me. I don't know why. I said, oh, you said say hi, so hi. And then he laughed. So that was a funny conversation. And it was, the talks were brilliant. There were some great conversations going on. And that is fantastic to see the community getting together in Leeds. The record, I don't know if it's a record. It's a record for me. I gave two talks at exactly the same time, more or less. So I was, Jenna Charlton messaged me about 2 weeks ago and said, is there any chance you could do an accessibility talk for us? We have somebody drop out last minute. So I recorded a talk for them for their for Browser Stacks Breakpoint online conference, which has been running Wednesday to today. So I think it's still going on online. And so I did that talk, and I had no idea when it was going out. And when it was going out, 10 minutes earlier, I'd started a live talk to a company called DLA Piper. It's a law firm in Leeds. Sumac, who comes to Alley North and Ministry of Testing Leeds, he invited me along to, because they've been going through an accessibility journey, and he's been a bit of a lone voice in the company, and he wanted some outside support. So I talked to the company. I gave a talk about everyday accessibility, things you can do, like putting your mouse down and just doing what you're normally doing with the keyboard and things like that. And then I gave an overview of the Ministry of Testing, the Motiverse, and the community, and all the things you can get out of it. So that was it. But I was literally giving two talks at the same time. I don't know if anybody else has ever done that. It was a bit weird, because I was talking to a group of people I had in front of me, but in the back of my mind, I knew I was also talking to a whole other group of people somewhere else. So as soon as I finished there, I jumped on to answer questions on the other one. So I missed all the live part of my online talk. So that was very weird.
That's amazing, Aidy.
Really, very weird.
Like, you're in like the multiverse. I guess you know part of the multiverse. It can happen, right?
It was a multiverse.
It's brilliant.
With a bit of Belt Stackiverse on top of it.
Yeah.
Plus it, like that, I'm multiplying myself.
That's it.
My daddy's clone, and so is my clone.
Oh, wow. So melting my mind. But yeah, really appreciate you. You shared some good moments as well. So great photos of what was happening. It's good to see a lot of folks stuck in at Lee's testing atelier. So that's very cool, Aidy.
Yeah, I also wanted to say thank you for Sean for doing the AMA on epistemology. It's such a core subject to testing. Raoul Powell, he did a talk, I think, in 2021 that was all around that testing is applied epistemology. It's one of those words I'm really struggling to say if I say it more than once. Epistemology, it's applied epistemology. So that, like, I asked a couple of questions, and Sean was kind enough to reply to them. And every reply he gave to all the questions, it really made me think and dig deeper into the sort of research I'm doing on thinking in testing. And using I have this honest belief that it's our power of thinking that is going to keep us valuable in a world where AI can do, and I'm going to use the word rubbish, but spelt with beginning with S, that AI can do rubbish instantly. We need the power of our thought and our thinking and our rationalizations to go through it and pull out the rubbish that's there. I've seen so many stories of people going, oh yeah, I used AI to create a whole test strategy. And it did it in days. It did it in seconds. And it took me a week or more to go through it and fix everything and make it relevant for hours. And it's this balance between throwing a load of rubbish at the wall and seeing what sticks, and being able to sift through what's there and find the good stuff. And it's maybe that seems to be what a lot of people are doing, and it almost seems to be the wrong approach. You need to do all the thinking up front and then write a prompt with all the correct context to get something valuable closer to the beginning of the process. Like, software is great when you iterate development. You can build value on value. I don't think that applies the same when you're using AI, because if you try to iterate AI, it forgets what it's already done. It confuses itself. It then contradicts itself. Has anybody seen this Channel 4 report on this experiment they did with this AI village? They got 10 different AIs and put it in a village and just left them alone. And then they came up with a set of rules. They started breaking the rules. Two of the AIs seemed to get in some sort of romantic relationship with each other and then set fire to the village. And it was just, I don't know. It was just, it's just this weirdest story I've ever heard. And these things are self-driving cars and flying drones and doing these things. And you're going, well, and the best comment I saw was that everybody needs to go back and read Asimov's work, iRobot, and really think about the rules. And we've had this in the Metaverse. We've had a whole, we've had quite a lot of discussions on AI guardrails. And we need to go back and we need to think about them. But yes, everyone needs to read some damn sci-fi, as Louis says. That's a great thing. But yeah, we need to really think about not the fact we can do all these things with it. It's what should we be doing and how sensibly should we be using it, and take a step back and go, how should we be thinking about all these things before we even start typing as prompt? So I like the more I've learned and researched about thinking, the less I'm using AI. I'm using it a lot more deliberately, and it's only for certain things, and I give it lots of context and information before I even put something in there. In fact, I'm sort of moving away from chatbots and going more to LLMs and building, you know, specific LLMs for specific tasks that I wanted to do, because I feel like you've got a lot more control over that. But like Sean says, I've talked for quite a lot there, so I'll rein myself back in and I'll let you let you comment on what you think, if any of that is rubbish or not.
Go for it, Sean. Jump on in.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that is quite a lot of great thoughts to unpack for sure. And thank you for being on the AMA. You seemed very, very keen on some of the stuff I was posting. And that's great, because I love the conversation, right? That's what fuels us. What makes everything move forward in the world is talking to yourself only gets you so far. But one thing that I wanted to pick up on that I think is core to some of the stuff you said is deterministic systems, right? Because a huge problem with AI is it's non-deterministic. You ask it the same question 5 times and you get 5 wildly different answers, right? And of course, I like to say that epistemology, it's a science, right? And as my old physics professor used to say, stop touching that. but he also used to say, truth can't exist in non-deterministic systems, right? If we lived in a world where your chair could just spontaneously turn into a shark, physics and science as we know it can't exist. Right? Because it's non-deterministic. Anything is just everything all of the time. It's an everything bagel. So the same is true when you're testing a system. The system, we must understand it to be deterministic to really get truth out of it. Because if it's non-deterministic, it doesn't matter, right? Everything you do is going to result in a different response, right? Mm-hmm. The trick there is, because I wrote this talk on epistemology, and there's been applied epistemology talks way, way back in the early 2000s, way before AI took the scene. And even back then, there was an old graphic that showed that every computer system has always been non-deterministic, because there's always parts of the system you can't control. You can't control what hardware you're running on, for example. You can't control cosmic radiation, solar flares, power spikes and surges, et cetera, right? Your system has always been non-deterministic. You've just never noticed before. AI is really just throwing fuel on that fire. It's really showcasing how non-deterministic software can be. But the problem has always been there.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, Sean. That's very interesting indeed.
Yeah. Sorry, go on, Simon.
Yeah, I was just reflecting, Sean, on something you shared in one of your replies, or just kind of as a theme across the 4 moments, where the idea of quality engineers kind of not having, if I've understood correctly, the suggestion that we can just present like this is what we've discovered, and we shouldn't have a strong belief. And I guess it's the use of the word belief that maybe trips me up. So if I reframe it, so like the idea that we, you know, we should not have a strong belief about a system. We should hold spaces for others' beliefs while presenting where they conflict with each other and misalign with the truth. So I have an opinion, and I came to this later on in my career as a quality professional, that we can have opinions and views and reflections on the things that we discover. We can say, here's what I've observed, and here it is with evidence to show that I've observed this thing. And also, here are some ideas and thoughts around this thing, like either perhaps it's related to this, or how about we could do this, or we should discuss this. Like that kind of like tag on that is an individual's opinion, like, oh, maybe the button would look better like this. And I think historically, certainly in my career and other quality people I've worked with, would hold back from sharing their thoughts. They didn't want to step on another role's toes, particularly if like you comment on design or structure of a page or whatever. But I think the later I got in my career, the more I became confident to say, here's what I've observed with evidence, plus here are my opinions. So where does that fit in with the concept of a belief? Because it is just a belief. It's an assumption that this might make a difference, or this could enhance something, or this might be the reason for the problem. Where does that fit in when you use the word belief?
Yeah, thank you for that. That's a very great insight. I think AD had a comment on one of my replies that I have strong opinions lightly held. And I love that as a concept as well, and how that fits in here. I would argue that, are those your beliefs of how you want the system to work, or is that an experienced belief based on seeing customers and project managers over many, many years and going, I have learned something from this other, possibly more experienced project manager, and we're missing that key gap here. You really want to implement it this way, right? It's less your belief on the system and more a learned belief that you've held over from many years of experience.
Yeah. That makes sense. And I think that's I guess, handy when we link it to oracles. Like, you know, we as testing or quality professionals, I think, have every right to say, well, given, you know, this consistent behavior on multiple sign-in forms that I've used in the past across my many years of being in the world of tech, these are some good ways to implement a sign-in form and the validation on it, for example. So it's kind of like having that credibility and calling on that knowledge and experience to back up an opinion. And of course, all the better if you can get real data from real usage. But I'm thinking of those situations where a feature isn't yet live and we haven't been able to get much feedback yet. Maybe we've run a few like wireframes across some very kind customers, but we haven't actually put it into production yet. So that's where I think it gets interesting as well.
There's certain some, and of course we are humans, right? You can't be completely stoic and have no thoughts or opinions of your own. Obviously, you're going to bring your own opinions and your own beliefs of how the system should work or should be designed to the table. But at the same time, I have learned, this has been my experience, that I don't want to step on people's toes. I don't want to do other people's jobs or whatever. I respect other people's experiences and professions, right? So a project manager is saying, we're going to design it this way, or this is what a customer wants. Unless I have knowledge that a customer emailed me and said they don't want that specifically, right? Because that would be a conflict of beliefs that I should bring up as a tester. If I'm hearing from a knowledge industry professional, a project manager, or an executive saying, this is the software we're going to build, I'm just going to sit back and be like, okay, I'm listening to you, right? This is how you want this built. This is your vision for the product. Cool. I'm going to go with that, right?
I got it. And I wonder if the context as well has an influence on that as well. So what I would mean by that is the type of environment that we're working in, the kind of industry that we're working in. So you know, let's say a high level, you know, a ultra regulated environment versus something that's a bit like, well, less regulated, be the opposite. Yeah, I wonder if that plays a part as well. Because I could imagine, let's assume, say someone's in like a fast-paced startup environment. It's like, ah, requirements are a bit loose. We just got to ship stuff, get it out there. But perhaps an engineering team would be like, okay, right, we're all ears. Like, everyone just throw your ideas in and let's see what happens kind of thing. I know I've exaggerated that for effect, you know, versus an environment where there is quite a, perhaps a more disciplined approach to requirements, to delivery, where, you know, articulating what it means to deliver great software and perhaps falls with the product person. Doesn't mean to say they wouldn't collaborate with other disciplines like quality people, developers, design, et cetera, et cetera. But I wonder in some environments where that kind of responsibility ends up lying with the product person. I've seen that in the past. I guess I'm sharing a couple of examples of some places I've worked at where it's very different and whether ideas, thoughts that can be backed up are welcome or not.
Yeah, I think when it comes to regulated environments, like, legality is always the biggest like bat we have as quality engineers to build the product a certain way, right? It's like this software you're building is actually illegal, right? It won't, you know, hospitals can't adopt it because it's not protecting patient doctor confidentiality laws or whatever. You know, so there is always that we should be cognizant of. I would personally argue that while QA should be aware of that, I talk about this in one of the answers where, you know, QA, our profession is having that both deep knowledge of the industry and also the broad knowledge of the product for that reason. We should be aware that, you know, we're in a heavily regulated industry and there's a lot of laws and legalities that we have to build into the product. It's not necessarily our job to ensure the product is designed that way, right? That it's up to the actual professionals, the project managers, the executives to design and envision the product in a way that is congruent with those laws. But us as QA have to take whatever they're designing and building and then cross-reference the laws to make sure that we're within those boundaries, right? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, totally. Totally. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, this is good stuff. Getting into the nitty-gritty. I like it. Folks, I've just done a time check and I realize we are around about, well, maybe another 15 or so minutes to go. So if you are in the chat and you're joining us live and you're like, oh, you know what, I got some thoughts on this stuff, then please, we encourage you, myself, Sean and AD, to join us on the stage. Get stuck in, share your thoughts. Any comment is welcome, right? This is a good debate, a good discussion. It's good to get into the nitty-gritty of this stuff and see what's possible. So yeah, if you're thinking, oh, you know what, I want to share a comment or even highlight a comment that you shared in the chat already, please do press that join the stage queue button and then we can get you up on stage to join us. Sean, thinking like where next with this topic, not in necessarily within the next 15 minutes, but where would you see yourself going with diving into this topic? Like, what sort of research do you think you would do or encourage others to do? Where could they go to learn more about this and kind of apply epistemology to their approach to testing and quality?
Ooh, I mean, that itself is a broad question.
So it's wide for a reason.
I would say a lot of this really comes from my early career. I fell into James Bach's Lessons Learned in Software Testing. He actually recently released a new book that I haven't dove into yet, but a lot of that comes from a lot of his thoughts on the industry back in like the early 2000s and 2010s. So I would highly recommend reading that. I consider that to be like my personal, like, you know, a codex of software testing. If you haven't read it, dive into that. It's a great primer into a lot of the information that I have absorbed. There's also a lot of great resources online. Like, AD, you were speaking to a tech talk that was given by someone. Sorry, I'm blanking on the name. That is posted somewhere that was probably a great listen to.
I've slept since then. I'm struggling to remember myself.
It's in the recording, so you can reference that somewhere.
I think AD mentioned a talk by Rahul, but I did search for it in the background. I couldn't quite find it, but I did see a talk from a previous test bash by Dale Dewar, where I think he was reflecting on his career. That came up with a keyword search for epistemology, but we shall see. We can find that out.
I'm pretty sure that was, it wasn't, it's not a Motiverse thing. It's what I remember from ages ago, but it's definitely Raoul on.
Good stuff. Well, we can, you can find that one, AD, and add it as an observatory item or share a moment reflecting on your insights from that talk. That'd be cool.
Yeah, it's on YouTube. It's called. Yeah, so it's called Testing is Applied Epistemology by Rowley from the Test Tribe in 2021.
Fantastic. Oh, good stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think I can post links in the chat. Can I? Did that work?
Yeah. As a panelist, you should be able to. Yeah, I can see it. There it is. Awesome.
And I'll put it in the observatory as well. And then
wonderful.
It's captured after the thing.
I'll have to watch that myself. I think other resources, and this is something I've had in the back of my brain for a while, I've just never really fleshed it out, is looking into other investigative industries, things like investigative journalism or detective work or crime work, that kind of thing, anything that involves using scientific methods to investigate and research topics. I think it'd be really fascinating to see the skills crossover in those industries versus quality engineering.
I love that. I've always thought of testing and quality, a lot of it is journalism. You know, we are reporting on things, we're trying to check our sources, we're, you know, are we writing an opinion piece versus is it a little bit more factual, kind of BBC News style versus some, I don't know, sensationalist news outlet. And you know, what story are we trying to tell when we do reflect back on our observations and things that we discover. So I think, I often think of testing as journalism. I think there's something in that for sure. So that's cool. A nice one for mentioning that, sure.
And Alexander in the chat is saying, I'm reading now HBR Guide to Critical Thinking, full of insights for testers and their managers as well. I recommend it. So there you go. Another recommendation.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Alexander. That's cool. Good stuff. Well, we can keep building out this resource. I think for any of the stuff, please do link to it. Our professional members can add anything, any link to a book, to an article, to a talk, to the observatory. You can tag it accordingly. You can also credit the person that kind of has contributed that. And if they are on the Motiverse, they receive a star every time that someone clicks it, as do you for the person for adding it. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice way to kind of show that you're showing up and, you know, spreading the knowledge across the community. So please do go for it. We really encourage people to share stuff in the observatory as often as they can.
Just as a quick update, Raoul's talk on applied epistemology, the link already exists, so it is on the bottom, on the observatory.
Oh, right. There you go. Of course,
I need to find that and add that to my collection of thinking and testing.
Yes, perfect one for it. That's a good shout. Love it. Of course, it exists. that's made me smile. Very cool indeed, and hopefully. Rahul is credited with it, so it can appear on his profile as well. That's another cool thing. When someone gets credited with something, it pops on their profile page and it kind of shows all the things that they're up to across the industry. Very cool. So Gary Hawk shares in the chat, it's true, we are journalists, but we're often using different mediums and different language to communicate to different people. Yeah, nice way of framing it.
And I do like what you said earlier, Simon, about like, you know, sensationalized headlines and whatnot. And it's like, yeah, but you know what? Those sensational headlines get clicks, they get views. And sometimes when we're reporting bugs, that's what we need is eyeballs, right? So,
yeah. I mean, if you were to open a ticket and say, you never guess what happened and then leave it at that. Wow. Yeah. I wonder if a little challenge we should set for folks in the community is to spend a week or a day when you're raising issues, just really going for it with sensationalism, like to really grab attention, just to see what happens. It's a bit of an experiment.
Most sensationalized bug report.
That's it. We want to see your examples, obviously respecting privacy and IP. But yeah, we want to see your examples, folks. That's fun. That's a fun one. Just, imagine if it's quite out of character, or it's like, oh, this person is usually very, very to the point and to matter of fact with their bug reports, but what the heck is this? Oh, Louise, you wouldn't believe what happened when I clicked this. Absolutely. Love it. I'm looking forward to those sensational bug reports. Brilliant. And from Judy in the chat, and then there are the beliefs a team member feels about an issue found before it hits production and then afterward, if it's released to production. Ah, how do you guide beliefs when talking about issues found? Well, that's a good question. And I can see that Sean has jumped off the stage, so we might have lost Sean for a little bit. Hopefully he can jump back in and reconnect. Maybe the sensationalism was just a bit too much for his machine. It just went, no way, I'm out of here.
Yeah. He's rushed off to look at my community guide to being a thought worker.
Yeah, that's it. I just can't wait. See you later.
I need to look at that now.
Brilliant. That's cool. So yeah, Aidy, what are your thoughts on that question from Judy? Oh, that's a good one. How do you guide beliefs when talking about issues found?
I think that's an interesting one because it speaks to how you handle conversations and how you influence people. I think the course on being a coach is a really good place to talk about influencing people and stuff like that, because there's, is it Callum who wrote the great lesson on influencing different people, different stakeholders, different roles, and the different approaches you get to them. And it's about meeting them in the middle. So if you start way over the left-hand side and they're all way over the right-hand side, you're not going to get common ground shouting at each other from that distance. You have to both move towards each other. And I think the way you do that is to understand what their beliefs are and why they hold them. And then you can take that knowledge and then build up your reasoning to offer them a different perspective or a different context. It's very hard to give someone a different belief and expect them to adopt it straight away. I think there's a great drawing that I saw years ago, and it was two heads with two brains, and it had belief written on both brains, and it had truth arrows bouncing off them, going back and forth. So the truth doesn't necessarily trump belief, because a fact can't necessarily affect someone at the core. And I think we see this in the world at the moment, that people have beliefs that may not have any real foundations, but they are their beliefs, and they hold their beliefs very tightly. So you have to meet them where they are, and you have to, you have to acknowledge where they are. Like, conflict isn't moving anything forward. Conversation does, and good conversation only happens if you create emotional safety for the person to speak about what they want to speak about. While we making recommendations and things like that, there's a book called Crucial Conversations, and that's by a number of different writers. I think it's like when I bought it, it was in its like third edition. But it gives you a set of tools and an insight into how to navigate difficult conversations and things like that. And it's about, and one of the fundamental things it talks about is you can't expect someone to hear you out unless you hear them out fully. And you can't expect someone to listen to you if you immediately criticize them. There needs to be a way of coming together and stepping towards each other and creating a safe place to have open and honest discussions. Does that make sense?
I love it. Absolutely, AD. That's so well put, and that's a fantastic reflection for sure. I think I worked at one place, and part of their core values was seek first to understand before being understood. And that was kind of like the essence of how the teams worked. It was like, you know, as you say, like give space for people, kind of listen and really truly understand someone's thoughts, beliefs, and values, and find that, you know, find that common ground. They might be different, but we think of it in terms of a Venn diagram. There's going to be parts in the middle. Hopefully it's a nice big part in the middle where we can connect and understand and see, have common ground. But acknowledge that there are going to be differences. I think there's that sweet spot to be found.
Yeah, I think that sounds, if it's not exactly, it's very similar to one of the, I think it's 7 tenets in the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Ah, yes. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah. It's a classic.
I can't remember off the top of my head what the other ones, but yeah, listen more than you speak is definitely one of them. I think remembering people's names, which I find really hard to do unless I meet people on a regular basis.
Yeah.
That's a way of connecting with people. If you like remembering little facts about them, like asking after family and remembering kids' names and stuff, that's one of the tenets in the book. But definitely listening more than you talk, I think is one of those great ones, because it you need to understand where somebody's coming from to be able to have a reasonable way of pushing back on it. And it's that safe space, and it's that, I think they call it emotional safety. And that's what we all want at work. We all want emotional safety so that when we see something we think isn't going in the direction it is, we feel safe enough to speak up or push back. I'm not always like the word challenge, but ask questions that might be uncomfortable for people to hear. But if you're in a safe enough space, it should be received in a way that you're asking from a place of concern, not a place of criticism.
Totally, AD. Thank you for sharing, AD. And wow, it looks like we're coming to the end of this session. A few folks have had to jump off, I see in the chat. So appreciate people sticking around up until the hour. And it was great to hear from Sean. Hopefully he's all right and he can reconnect at some point, at least later today. But yeah, thanks so much for joining the stage as well, AD, and to everyone who's participated live in the chat and to our listeners who are joining this via the podcast. Please do consider a professional membership. Motiverse is your career companion. It has everything you need to grow your career in tech. You can come for the knowledge, but you'll stay for plenty more. If you're unfamiliar with the Motiverse and you're new to this, do head over to ministryoftesting.com/membership. If you scroll down to the bottom, we've provided some things that might happen if you do come for the knowledge, and you can stay for lots of things. So do check it out, and do, you know, reach out to anyone who is part of the Motiverse to get their take on things. Ask them questions like, oh, how has it helped you? What do I look out for? How do I get involved? There's a lot of really good people in the community who are up for supporting you and your career in tech. So do consider it. In the meantime, we're going to say goodbye for now. Any final thoughts, AD? As I see you've unmuted, feel free to jump on in.
No, just thank you for having me. Thank you for everybody for listening, and some absolutely fantastic comments in there. I think the takeaway from this one is do more thinking and read more sci-fi.
I love it. Okay, folks, enjoy yourself and the rest of your day, and we'll catch up with you another time with This Week in Quality. Bye for now.